We have a guest speaker today, Mr. Steen Hochland. I think that it's not very difficult to pronounce his name as your former professor who spoke right just before Steen spoke, as Steen is going to speak. He is basically a Norwegian but studied in Sweden, taught in China, and now studying at the University of Toronto. He's a researcher there at the University of Toronto. And he specializes in international development studies. And one of my very senior colleagues and good friends is his guide. And they are together working on. He specializes in open access resources and development of open educational resources, particularly for the developing countries. And incidentally, he's truly international in the sense that, he has about multinational family, and his going to be better health is going to be from China.
Already.
So that is one thing. And he also knows 8 languages, including Hindi. So I just wanted to warn you if you're speaking in Hindi,
thank you very much, and naya sal ka mubarak ho. Meri hindi to itni achi nahi hai, to main angrezi mein meri presentation de dunga. So I'm very, very happy to be here. I'm very honored and also a little bit apprehensive because I know that in this audience there's not, undergraduate students or people who have no experience. There's people who are very, very intelligent and have a lot of life experience. So it's an honor for me to be able not just to share with you some of my research and my thoughts, but also I hope to hear a lot of your feedback. And I will try to leave time at the end. And I hope that you will be very critical, please engage with what I have to tell you and see if it is relevant to you, to your studies, and to the situation of India. So I changed the title a little bit. Hopefully this will be useful to you. I said openness, and I will discuss in quite a lot of detail this concept, which is very large and has a lot of different facets. What is the relevance for your own research as you're here at IIPA, and perhaps some of you will go on to do their PhD or other kind of studies? What is the implication for India? And this could be also for the city, for the province, the state, where you are working. Interesting. So I see that my slides are a little bit garbar hai, but we will survive. So my simple outline, I will talk a little bit about open research, and this is to help you in the process of conducting research here. Then I will talk a little bit more deeply about what is the meaning of openness. I will tell some simple stories of openness, and then we will try to transfer those ideas that we learned onto India. And I've chosen just 2 cases: open educational resources and open government. So before I start, just a little bit about myself. As Dr. Munshi said, I am a graduate student at the University of Toronto in the School of Education, and my research focuses on open educational resources around the world, specifically in China. But I'm also very interested in what's happening in India. Later this week, I'm giving a talk at IGNU, the Open University, and I often also share examples from what India is doing when I'm talking abroad, because I think India in this field is already doing a lot of very wonderful things, but there's the potential to take this even further. Now, I also hope that you ask a lot of questions at the end. There's many things I can't say in just a short time, so I'm happy to elaborate. I will also give you my email at the end, so I'm happy to engage with you later, or maybe when you have some research topic that you're interested in. So open research. Now, this is just my own thinking, to think that for research, we need 3 different elements. We need access to previous knowledge. So everything that has been written, that has been researched, that has been gathered for the last thousands of years and the last tens of years, we need to get access to this. We need to partake in conversation, right? We need to communicate with our peers around the world, and this meeting is an example of that. And we need access to the tools that we need to do research, and they vary depending on what kind of research we want to do. So my question is also always, how can we open the access? How can more people in more countries be able to do top quality research? The only thing that should be a limiting factor is your own capacity. And it should not be a limiting factor whether you live in Canada or India or Africa, whether you have the luck of being accepted to the IIT or whether you are a working mother. If you have the capacity to do high quality research or make contributions of ideas, there should be the platform for that. And luckily, we're seeing that this is happening slowly, and we want to see how can we push this forward. So looking first at previous knowledge, of course, if we want to do research, you know, Google Scholar has a slogan. They say, standing on the shoulders of giants, right? If we're doing research, we cannot start from nothing. We have to base on everything that already exists. Otherwise, how can we make any contribution? And of course, library is the traditional place that we go. This is from Benares University. Traditionally, this has been a limiting factor because I'm at the University of Toronto, which has the fourth biggest academic library in the world. So it's an extreme privilege for me to be at such an institution. In India, they have certain very good quality libraries, but it depends on where you are and which institution you belong to. In other countries, there is almost no resources available. So initiatives such as this is the Open Library. It's a coalition of a number of different organizations. And what they do is that they scan books that have already lapsed into a public domain, so there's no copyright issue, and they make them available to anyone. You can read the whole text, you can download them. You see, this is an old picture. It says 234,000 books, full text. This is old, now there's 1 million. So 1 million books available. Of course, these are old books, so you will not find very much about computers or about, but still, it is still our heritage, and it's an incredibly important resource. So here's a Sanskrit reader that you can read in its full version, and a large number of resources available there. This is a project called the Universal Library. It's a collaboration between India, China, and the University of Alexandria in Egypt, and their goal is to scan 1 million Indian books. So you see here is Telugu. They have Hindi, Malayalam, Bengali, all these Urdu, all these available. Once again, older books that have not covered by copyright. But once again, an amazing resource. These are all available in full version. So you can download. Anyone with internet connection can now get access to this. And this, of course, is a work that we're pushing forward. But as I said, this is talking about the material that is quite old. So we also need to be able to get the newest research. And for many fields of research, journals is one of the main vehicles, right? Now, journals is also a limiting factor. Many of these journals are extremely expensive. In fact, some medical science journals, some computer science journals, will cost $5,000 per year for 4 issues. And the reason, of course, is that they spend a large amount of time and energy to edit, but there might only be 100 subscribers on different university libraries. These are very specialized. But if you don't have access to the cutting-edge research, you will be left behind. And later, if you want to publish and you are not citing the most advanced research, you will not be able to publish. So this is a large problem. And there are two... So we're talking about open access to scholarly publication. Okay, there are two different venues for this. The first is that we can have journals that are themselves open access. This is an example from India. It's actually a very famous example in the world that where India is really leading the way. This company publishes a large number of journals. And they used to be, you know, closed access, available for subscription. But of course, they didn't have a very far reach. So the University of Toronto perhaps said, oh, we don't want to subscribe to this Indian journal. Maybe the quality is not that good. Now, the editor decided to say, no, we want to open this to the world. Anyone can go to the website and read all the articles. And what happened is that a lot of international researchers said, now I'm willing to publish here because everyone will be able to read it. So there was a large increase in the number of submissions. Of course, this meant that the quality of the journal went up because they could choose the very best pieces. Then there was a large increase in the number of readers because you have this higher quality and you have this better access. So that if I search for, I want to know about this topic, it's equally possible that this will come up in Google as some very expensive Western journal. So Indian research is exposed to the world. But how can they do this to and earn money? In fact, they are making a profit. Because, first of all, they're still selling paper versions. Because in India, still a lot of libraries, a lot of individuals would like access to the paper version. And they're also selling ads. And because they now have such a larger circulation, and because, of course, in India, it's possible to do certain things very rational, very cost-effective, they are making a profit. And they are spreading Indian science to the world. They're acting as a bridge between Indian researchers and international researchers. It's a wonderful example. And here's a directory of open access journals. This is also an old picture. In this, it says they have 4,500 journals, all freely available. So you are free to, and they're in many different languages, most in English, in all kinds of fields. So if you have an interest in a specific field, you can go there and you will find that journal. And this, of course, is increasing as we go along. Then you have another venue. If you publish your paper in a journal that is closed, in fact, about 90% of all journals allow you to self-archive. This means to put your draft on a public computer so that it will be accessible to everyone. This is for library science. This is also multilingual, which is very interesting. So they have actually quite a lot of articles in Bengali, and I have some in Malayalam, in all languages of the world. People publish in one journal, and then they take that Word document and they also put it here. And there, that is legal by the publisher. So when you are putting some query into Google Scholar, which you might know about, it will often give you two links. It says, here's the link to the journal, but you don't have access. It's quite expensive. Here is the link to the author's homepage or to eLIS or some other repository. It is free. And this is another... So eLIS is for library science. Anyone who wants can submit. But you also have for institutions. So this is an example from an Indian institution where they are trying to put their research publications and their theses online. If you visit the directory of open access repositories, similarly, you can list all the repositories in India, all the repositories on certain topics. So I highly recommend that if you publish papers later, that you try to get the right to self-archive and that you make it available. Because when you write papers, your goal is to be read. I mean, that is the scientist's goal, is to share their information. And of course, for scientists, it's also important to be cited. And the more people read you, the more people can cite your publication, the more impact you will have. So in fact, scientists are very much in favor of this system to make more access available. Open educational resources. In fact, this is my main field of study. And I could talk for many hours just on this, but today I will not. I'm happy to answer questions afterwards. But you should know that there is an incredible amount of open educational resources available. This includes video of lectures. For example, in India, you have IGNU, which has put thousands of hours of lecture material. You also have the IITs, have put a lot of their lectures online. But you also have universities in 30 different countries. China, in fact, is very aggressive also in this field. So that if you are doing your research, you're doing your learning, and later when you're back in your work, you hopefully will be engaging in lifelong learning, because we are never finished. Our society is developing so fast, we have to constantly stay abreast, and accessing this kind of material can be a very very efficient way of staying abreast with the newest things. I've heard, for example, from engineers who graduated 15, 20 years ago, and they say, okay, I'm going back to see some lectures from the MIT or from the IIT to stay up to date. What's the latest in my field? So this can be also very useful to you. That was we want to get access to all the information that already exists. But as I said, research and scholarship cannot exist in isolation. We need to be part of a network of scholars, of practitioners. And this was also a limiting factor in the past. And why is it important for a professor to work at a good institution? Because he has good colleagues that he can have tea with and he discusses the latest ideas. He has very smart students that we give feedback about her research. But ideally, with the internet, this kind of networking is expanding. And of course, that's one of the reasons I'm here today, is because I'm able to connect with Indian scholars and we can exchange information. So there are many ways of doing this. This is just a few: mailing lists, virtual conferences. Going to conferences is extremely expensive, but now there are certain virtual conferences that you can attend. Blogging, of course, can be a very good venue for spreading information. Turning journal articles into conversations. This is the idea that we don't want to just open the access to this PDF, which is kind of a dead thing. We want to be able to have the PDF not be the end of the publication process, but be the beginning of the conversation. So ideally, we will have an article, and we will have comments, we will have feedback, we will have links to newer research, and this will be part of a longer conversation. Open notebook science, that's more for the hard sciences, but it's people who are saying we don't want to just open the final article. In fact, we want to try to open the entire research process so that you can see every day what we're writing in our lab notebook, and you can give us feedback, and we can catch this kind of opportunities much earlier. One example from myself, in fact, 2 years ago, I was invited to talk at this institution at IIPA, and I gave this presentation which you see here. And I have a habit of always, when I'm giving a presentation, I record it, so right now I'm recording what I'm saying, and I also put the PowerPoint together with my recording on this website which is called SlideShare, to share your slides, so that anyone who is interested can see it. At that time, when I was here at IIPA, I think about 30 people perhaps was listening. Of course, you know, that was a very good opportunity for me to connect with those people. But it's also nice to be able to share your stuff with even further. So now my presentation has been online for 2 years. What's the result? Well, if you see there, there have been 3,500 people viewing this presentation. So 30 people at IIPA, 3,500 online. Some of them just have a quick look, 88 download the whole PDF, and others wrote emails to me, and actually I got several opportunities because of this. They said, okay, you're young, you're not PhD, but we don't care about your CV, we already see what you can do, so would you like to come here and give a presentation? Would you like to collaborate with me on a paper? Right. So this is extending that conversation. This is an example, as I said, from the open sciences. Here's someone who's kind of sharing their research process. And for most people, it's not interesting, but if you're doing very similar experiments, you might find it extremely interesting. So that is the process, this conversation that we want to be part of. Now, tools, of course, is the tools that you need to do your research, which is very different depending on which field you are in. But there's a lot of open source software out there. And I mentioned just a few examples. Some of you might be interested in geographical information systems of mapping of different kinds. There are all kinds of tools for that. Mathematics and statistics, of course, is a very important field. Bibliography management is something that everyone's doing academic work might need. And even simple OpenOffice is like Word, but it's free and it's for writing your thesis. So this is a large amount of tools available freely. Right, which also is aiming at reducing this gap between the people who have access to resources and the people who don't. Now, of course, I realize that for a lot of what I'm saying, you need a computer and you might need internet. And I realize that that is something that's very unequally distributed in India today. So I'm not kind of naive and think that everyone has access to this. But of course, the access is increasing. And we hope that this will continue. And it's a very important thing that we need to support. And hopefully we can also try to bridge it with kind of computer centers and very affordable laptops and so on. But I do realize that that's a big barrier. So now I told you a little bit about things. Yes, sir? Yes. Well, so this is just a very brief list, but... there are people who would like to develop applications for mobile phones or for iPhones and so on. And it's quite expensive to purchase a lot of these devices. So there are programs that can let you emulate it on your laptop. And of course, this depends on what you want to do. But it's just one example of making this more affordable. So as I said, I gave you, this is very, very brief, but hopefully giving you some ideas, I can expand later, about how this openness idea can be useful to you or to anyone out there who is doing research, who is wanting to share their research, right? But it's very pragmatic. It's saying it's useful. But now I want to try to look at this idea of openness a little bit deeper and see how openness, in fact, is not just about free, it's not just about you don't need to pay money, but it's something that's actually more transformative, I even use that word. So I will tell you some stories, and hopefully then later you will see why these stories are very important. Now, when we talk about free and free and open, this word has different meanings, and this illustration shows two meanings. So usually we talk about free as in speech and free as in beer, or free as in chai or whatever. The meaning is free as in beer means you get it, you don't have to pay, and you can drink it. So that's fine. That's very nice. I don't have money, I can get it for free. Free as in speech means you have a right. So it's something much more fundamental than money or not money, right? It's something that you have the right to do something. It's a very kind of profound concept. So what does that mean? Well, for example, we have this idea of open source. Now, Linux, OpenOffice, Firefox, many applications that you might use are open source. And this is much more deeper than the fact that you can download it for free. Because Internet Explorer, you can also download from free from the Microsoft website, but it's not open source. Because after you download it, you have no rights except you can use it. But you have no rights to do anything more with it. It belongs to Microsoft. Whereas if you download Firefox, you will also get the entire source code, the entire recipe for making this program. You can then take that source code and change it any way you want. You can then give it to anyone else that you want. And one example of how this is important to India's development is languages. Because India has a lot of official and unofficial languages. And Microsoft says, well, we will translate Microsoft to Hindi because there is a large user base. But we don't really want to spend money translating Microsoft into Telugu and Kannada and Marathi. The Indian government says, okay, fine. We are willing to support this, to spend our own money to get Microsoft translated, because this is the right of different people in India to have access to software in their own language. But even if the Indian government is willing to do this, they cannot. Right? Only Microsoft can do this. With Linux, if you want to do it, you can do it. And therefore, the Indian government and different organizations have sponsored the translation of Linux operating system into many different regional languages. And even groups of just volunteers can do this. Right? So you have the ability to take this and adapt it to your local needs. And this is really crucial. So, as you see, you have not just you can use it for free, you can adapt it, you can change it, you can distribute it freely. There's only one thing you cannot do, which is to take this freedom away from anyone else. So you can take Linux, you can translate to Marathi, and you can sell it even in the market if you want to. But you cannot say to the people who get it that they cannot take it and change it themselves, right? That is fair. Now, so this concept started with the open source, and it inspired a lot of people. It's a huge international movement. And people started thinking, well, if we can do this for software, can we also do it for other human expressions? Culture, education, scientific information, movies, everything, pictures. And they came up with a new license, which is called Creative Commons, which does the same kind of thing for any kind of cultural expression. So it's a simple way of telling people, I give you the right to do these things. I'm sharing it with you explicitly. Now, this is an example of what this kind of license enables. This is a platform for sharing music. But it's not just for sharing your finished work. Okay, so let's say that I'm a very good singer. I wish, but I'm not. Let's say I am, and I have a Norwegian popular tune that I record, and I upload this onto this site. Then you have a Hindi sitar player who says, this Norwegian traditional music is very interesting. I want to... He downloads it, he adds the sitar, and he puts it back up. Then you have a reggae artist from New York. He says, this rhythm is very nice. I will add some drums. He downloads, he adds the drums, he put it back up. Now, these people don't know each other. They didn't communicate. They didn't say, can I please... They have been giving the right already. You don't have to wait till afterwards, right? I give the right already. And so you get this incredible international collaboration of people, this creative collaboration. And this is the first example of how open is not just free. Here's my music, take it. It's really changing the way that people can work with each other. Well, so this is not against copyright, because we already use this license, so we explicitly say, I give you permission. That is what the Creative Commons license is. So the Creative Commons license is based on copyright. They say, okay, this is copyright, but if you fulfill these demands, you have permission already. And if you don't, for example, if I take your music, I add some drums, and I put it on a CD, and I say, nobody else can change this, then I have broken those, and then I'm infringing your copyright. So, in fact, this isn't an attack on the copyright system. It's building on the copyright system, and it's giving you more choice about how you want to share your material. All right? It's voluntary. If people didn't use the CC, I cannot take it. Yes. Sorry? Why? No. I mean, if it was maybe some political information they don't need, they don't like, they might block it, but there's nothing negative about this kind of site, I think. And in fact, the Chinese government is also looking into supporting Creative Commons. So this license, I mean, I could give you a lot of details, but it has also been ported to different legal systems around the world, because every country has a bit of different tradition. So they will write the license so that it is in conformance. So there is a Creative Commons India, and they have written the license in India so that it will be in conforming with the Indian laws. So this kind of system already exists. So this is just one kind of frivolous example. I mean, it's very fun, but it might not have very much impact for the governance of a state, right? But we're starting with these small stories. You can put all your pictures on Flickr, you might have heard of, and when you upload it, you can choose, I want to use this specific license, and other people can search. So if you want to write that report, and you say, I need a picture of the Eiffel Tower, or the Lal Qila, but I need a picture that I'm allowed to use in my book, then you can say, okay, Lal Qila, and this license, and it will only show you the pictures with this specific license. So when you are publishing something and you don't want to break the copyright, this is a good way. So this open concept, right? We started with the open source, then we have this open culture, which is very wide, and then people start thinking about all kinds of different ways that we could use this open. So we even have this conference called Open Everything. They want to see, can we apply openness to governance, to data, to companies? What is an open company? What would that look like? So they try to kind of being very inspired by this concept. So basically, openness, there are three kind of pillars. Okay, first of all, open license. This means you give the permission for people to use it, not just to read it, but also to change it and to distribute it. So you could use the open license for software. You could use the Creative Commons. There might be also some other licenses, but you must give this permission. Second is the open file format. Okay, for software, we would give the source code. What does that mean for culture? Well, if you give me a PDF, it's very difficult for me to change it. Even if you give me permission, it's very difficult. So please give me the Word document, or give me the PageMaker file. Give me the underlying product that I also can change. Right? And we will see later why that's important. The third is open collaboration. So the first product might be created just by you or by a certain group of people, but then later facilitate that the wider community can get involved and collaborate on this, because everyone will benefit. Okay. So if these are the pillars, then I will tell two small stories about how this can be beneficial, and then we will look at some cases within India. Hopefully you will know about Wikipedia. And Wikipedia, of course, both it is an open license. It also is very much open collaboration. And of course, you cannot really have open collaboration if you don't have an open license. If people have to ask permission all the time, it will not work. So here's a personal story of how I learned this kind of power of open collaboration.
Yes. Wikipedia, is it allowed to be quoted as a source in research papers?
Well, that depends on the research paper. But usually you should not quote any encyclopedia, even Encyclopedia Britannica. It's better to use it as a starting point. So if you want to do research on a certain topic, you can go to Wikipedia, and ideally they will have a lot of citations. So this is kind of not the end point, this is the start point of your research. Okay, so let's see. Now, the story of a seed, the idea is that you plant something very small, and with the help of other people, this thing will grow. So this is the... When I was studying in my school, we had to study soil science because this is part of development. And I'm not a soil scientist. I'm not a very hard scientist. So it was very difficult for me. But this was the night before the exam. And I was studying with my friend about these different kinds of soil and their pH values and how what can grow in this. And I found it very difficult to understand. So I thought, what if I check Wikipedia? Because oftentimes the article in Wikipedia is written in a very accessible language. So I checked the article for podsol, which is one kind of soil that has 70% of Canada's land is podsol. And I found they have no article about podsol at all. This is a few years ago. So at that time I said, okay, I'm not an expert, but I know more than nothing. I know a little bit. So with my friend, we look in our textbook and we write a few sentences. This is exactly what we wrote in, you see, 11 December 2004. So our exam was on the 12th of December, right? So that night, we're writing just a few sentences. We say, okay, this is a little contribution to knowledge. Then we forget about it. We go the next day, I do the exam, I get passing mark, but not very good. And we forget. Okay, half a year later, I'm talking to my friend. I said, do you remember that crazy night? We're sitting up, we're studying, we wrote this article about something we don't really know. I wonder what happened to it. So we go to visit it. And the nice thing about Wikipedia is that every change is recorded. So you can really follow how every article will develop. So you see that a lot of people have made contribution to this article. Some people just change one comma. Some people maybe add a lot, right? And now we have a beautiful long article with citations, with pictures, you know, something that I could never have written. But I planted that seed. And maybe if that seed hadn't been planted, some other people would not say, oh, I want to improve a little bit here. I want to improve a little bit here. So this is kind of the power of collaboration. Okay. Now, I want to tell you another example that's also about Wikipedia. So this is a story that's enabled by openness. So in Wikipedia, you will have articles in different languages. There's maybe more than 200 languages represented in Wikipedia. Some of them very developed, some of them very small. So you can look at the same article in English and in Hindi. And between these articles, there are links. So you can see here, this article exists in many different languages, right? So you can go from the English article in Delhi to the Hindi article in Delhi to the Punjabi article to the Urdu article to the Chinese article. Xindoli is the Chinese name for Delhi. So I thought, okay, this is very interesting. Without realizing, we've created this network of links between languages and titles. I wonder if you could actually exploit this in some way. And because not only does Wikipedia have an open license, in fact, it makes its entire database available for download. Very large download. But you can download it, which means you can put it on a DVD and give it to people who do not have internet. Or you can use this database in different ways. So I wrote a little program that goes through the entire database and picks out all these links between Chinese and English. And what you get is a dictionary. Not a dictionary between normal words, but if I want to know how to say Dili in Chinese, I will have this link. If I want to know how to say Shah Rukh Khan in Chinese, I will have this link. This is not in any normal dictionary. But suddenly we have this incredible database. So I did this. And of course, I didn't just do it, but I also share exactly how I did it. So I put it, this is my blog, and I put it there and I said, here is exactly the code that I used. It's free. If you want to use it, please use it. And so here you see, for example, if you search for education, this is just a little bit of the listing you would get, Chinese, English. Of course, you can do this for any language, Hindi and English, Hindi and Norwegian. It will be possible. So I thought this is very fun. I put it out there. Somebody said, oh, this is great. We want to make a Norwegian Chinese dictionary using my source. And here you have Chinese, Norwegian. Somebody else said, oh, this is great. I want to make a dictionary with Thai and English. And they made it. Right? So you see two things happening here. The first is the importance of openness is that it enables people to do things with your data that you had never thought of. Right? Wikipedia didn't start out saying we want to make this dictionary. They said we want to make this encyclopedia. But because they made their data available, I didn't have to ask their permission. Please give me your database. I just took it. I was able to do this thing. And other people have done incredible projects with the Wikipedia data and other data. That's one thing. Second, because I shared what I did, the source code and the procedure, other people could take that further, right? So this is kind of the power of open collaboration. Okay, so how does this apply to some cases in India? Well, if we start looking at open educational resources, then there are some very wonderful cases from India. You might know the National Program on Technology Enhanced Learning. They've taken thousands of hours of IIT lectures and put them online on YouTube. Anyone can watch them for free. However, there is this ugly thing on their video. It says, it's illegal to copy, adapt, or edit this videotape. You cannot distribute it. It's strictly prohibited. I say, why? In a country where you really want to enhance education, where you really want to push this access out, if I am in Benares, and I say, this is wonderful, I want to burn some DVDs and sell them for some rupiah on the street to people who have DVD player, but they do not have internet, why is that so prohibited? Huh? If I want to take section of this and use it in my class, so I'm modifying, which I'm not allowed to do, why is this so horrible? You know, IITs are there to serve the Indian people. So I really hope, and actually I've seen some examples from the IIT planning that they're thinking about making this more open. I really hope they do. Igyan Kosh, this is from IGNU. It's also an incredible resource. And they have this repository of all their different texts. So for example, here's just one example, cost analysis in education. So I'm thinking, actually, I would be very happy to use some of this material in my teaching in Canada, because this is very high quality material. However, I might want to modify it a little bit. So this is PDF. Well, I want to take the text out of this dead PDF and put it in somewhere where I can change it, in a wiki, in a blog, in a Word document. Then I would like to invite my friends, say, this is the cost analysis in education with examples from India. Can you add your example from China? Can you add your example from Sri Lanka? And the result will be some kind of an improved version, just like the Wikipedia article became improved. Of course, it will be openly licensed. So if IGNU says, wow, this is amazing, they can take it back. And for free, without IGNU contributing any money or resources, they have then received this improved version. Right? And this is also the power of openness. That you make it open, other people improve it for you for free. If they don't like it, they don't have to take it back. I mean, this is their choice, right?
I have a question.
Yes, please.
What about authenticity of the function given in this type of articles? Would you add something?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What is the
exactly. So there are different ways of ensuring the quality, and quality very much depends on who is using the resource, because quality is not really an objective thing. It depends on the purpose. So I think there's a project called Connections, which is a repository of these open educational resources, and they have a very nice concept. It's called Lenses. So they say, okay, here's all this material, and we don't guarantee. Maybe it's good, maybe it's not. But then you can log in, and you can say, I want to create a lens. This is seeing the world through my eyes. and you say, this resource, I've looked at it, is very good, I give my stamp of approval. This resource is very good. Then other students who come can choose to view the world through your eyes. So for example, this program, IIPA for government officials, could choose to select certain material that they find is quality, and then all the students in this class would be able to see only those material. But other people could define another version of quality, right? So there are different ways of dealing with this quality.
They say that over a period of time,
right.
Maybe
yes. Yes. So you have two different ideas, because for Wikipedia, we only want one version, the one canonical version. So in that case, everyone will make edits to that specific version, and there will be some common concept of what is a good article. And if you write something, they say, is that true? Well, you put a citation, and they can check it, and so on. And as you said, ideally, and we see this is happening, it is converging towards higher quality. Right? Now, in another case, for example, in this case, you might want a lot of different versions. You might want one version for IGNU, which is quality checked by their process of quality checking, which is exactly targeted to their students. But I might want to, if I'm a professor at the University of Toronto, I might want to take this, modify it, add examples, and give it to my students. And in this case, I am guaranteeing that, because I'm their professor, I'm guaranteeing their quality. And you have two different versions. It doesn't mean one is better than the other, but they are aiming at different things. Okay, so I'm just going to move on now, but I'm happy to discuss this more afterwards. Anyway, so in this case, what do I want them to do? I want them to use an open license to let me do this thing. And ideally, if they have, give me also the Word document or some underlying. Now, in this case, it's scanned. Right? They took a book and they scanned it. So they don't actually have that file. That's fine. I can do it. But in the case when they have the underlying file, please also give it to me. Now, here's the third example from India. This is the National Council of Educational Research and Training. And they've done a wonderful thing. They've taken all the textbooks that they have from first grade to 12th grade and put it online entirely. So it's wonderful that I can go and, you know, I'm learning Hindi. So the first grade Hindi textbook is perfect for me. That's about my level, right? So I can study with the first grade Indian child, and I feel, you know, at that level. And this is wonderful. However, you know, once again, I might want to take one of these books and translate to Norwegian. They might have a very nice math textbook, and I want, with lots of beautiful illustrations, I would like to share it with Norwegian children or Indonesian children. But as you can imagine, taking this PDF with all these pictures and trying to change the text is extremely difficult. So please give me the file underneath. And another example, in fact, this website is very user unfriendly. It's very difficult to find out how to download the PDF, especially if you're on a Mac. Actually, all the links don't work. And several friends told me, oh, why can you only see the table of contents? Because they could not understand how you can download the whole thing. So I found this one Indian who said, this is very silly. Here we have all this wonderful resource. People are not using it. They cannot access it. So he wrote some scripts. And this is just a guy working in IT in Bangalore. So he's got quite good IT skills. And he wrote some scripts to download all the books and make the website much more easy to use. And this is the website that he made himself. And it's much easier to go find all the books available and download them. Now, this is, to me, a wonderful contribution, but this is illegal. Right now, what he did is illegal because NCERT did not use an open license. Now, I think that we should support this kind of initiative. I mean, he did this completely free on his own time because he's passionate about more people having access to education in India. This is what we want. So why are we making that illegal rather than acknowledging, right? This is why we need to use an open license. Okay. So this is basically my idea, that by making this kind of research and teaching available, India itself is benefiting in many different ways, as I hope I showed. But the world is also benefiting because India has so much to give to the world. And the world is willing to listen. Right now, a student who cannot understand his physics class has the choice between going to YouTube and watching the IIT video or the MIT video. They are exactly next to each other. I think that's a wonderful thing. And it would be interesting to see which one he or she chooses. And maybe they will choose the IIT video over the MIT. And this is a chance for India really to get a lot of recognition in the world. So I hope that this will continue this progress. Now, I've got about 5 minutes left. So my last little section is, okay, all these ideas that we talk about, what does that mean for open government? And I will specifically talk about open data. Now, there are other kind of open government, but I will talk about open data. So, okay, this is a little bit garbled, but this is what the British government recently announced. They say public data will be published, reusable, machine-readable form, available and easy to find, using open standards. We will give you the raw data set. We will use an open license, which enables free reuse. And, of course, we will not publish personal data, that is obvious. Now, what is the background of this kind of very revolutionary statement from the British government? The background is that you might have heard about this scandal about the MPs abusing their spending accounts. And the newspapers got access to their accounting, and they found out that these MPs were charging, you know, all kinds of different costs that they did not have the right. And this was a scandal. A lot of people had to leave. So the people said, we want more openness. We want to see what is going on so that we can actually keep track of these people. And so that is one reason, but it's far from the only reason. This is from the San Francisco. And in San Francisco, so of course, you know, San Francisco is next to Silicon Valley, so there's a lot of geeks in that city. And they're saying, you know, this city is collecting so much data about the number of potholes on a given street, on where the crime statistics, on the pollution of the air, the investment in schools. I mean, millions of databases are there. We would like to get access to them. And we would like to get access to the underlying data, not just the fancy web page where I can make a search. I want the real thing, because then I can use it for things, and this is an example from Wikipedia, I can use it for things that you did not expect. Okay, this is the key thing here. So in San Francisco, they're giving access to all these different data sets. Here's one, the beach water quality. Okay, and they will give you the raw data. You can download it. You can do what you want with it. So what are people doing with this? Well, there's a lot of examples. Here's someone who designed they use Google Maps and data from San Francisco to give you a map of where you can get accessible parking if you're handicapped, right? So this website is not made by the government or the city. It's made by someone, some company or some individual who thinks it's fun or who thinks they need it, right? It's useful to all people who are handicapped in San Francisco, and the city gets this for free by making their data available. This is a similar map. Actually, it wasn't loaded yet, but this is a similar map showing you where you can park your bike. Okay, so if you're biking around, you need a bike rack to park it, you can find it here, using the data from the city. Now, this one shows where the crime is happening. So if you, all the data coming directly from the police, and they can map it on the map, right? Mom maps. So this is on your iPhone. You can find the different places to go to take your children, which is the library, when is the library open. And this tells you where you can throw your garbage and where you can recycle your garbage, right? This tells you about the health inspection. So if you want to go out and eat, of course, there is some database where people can say, this food is delicious. But in this case, you can also see it was last inspected 3 months ago, and this is the grade it got. Right? This data is all there, but by making it kind of very user-friendly and very accessible, you give access to normal people. And the wonderful thing is that the job of making this accessible and making it user-friendly, you don't have to do it yourself, right? You can say, okay, Delhi government does not have the resources to make all these kind of wonderful websites and iPhone apps, and maybe it's also unfair that maybe they should use their resources on something else. That's fine. There is so much private initiative, right? And so all you need to do is, in fact, make this data available and other people can do this, okay? Here's the statistics of property sales, which part of the city, how much money, when were they sold, okay? And here's an example from Vancouver, which also opened its data. They have a hackathon, so they invite all kinds of programmers. They say, come here for 2 days, we'll give you a free pizza, and take our data, and do interesting things with them, right? So really encouraging the citizen to get involved. Okay. So these are just some examples of what is out there. I really believe that this kind of openness, this concept, whether it's in science, whether it's in research, in education, in government, in private enterprise, really has an incredible potential. And this is the case in India as well. So I see that India in this field is already doing a lot, and in fact is getting recognition around the world for the things that it's doing. And certainly when I give talks around the world, I always mention certain examples from India that are very impressive. But we can do more. And I would love to hear some of your ideas or some of your questions around this. This is my email. You're very welcome to contact me anytime. And also my blog. And this is where I post all my presentations. So this presentation today, as well as any other I've given, will be there. Thank you very much. Yes. So, do you mean this openness movement in general, or do you mean open data and government very specifically? Well, I mean, so for open data, certainly it's spreading rapidly because these cities are really seeing what will happen. I mean, previously there was a lot of concern about making data available because they said, well, first of all, this data is not really beautifully kind of finished. It's quite a raw and only we know how to use it. And they said, maybe you will misinterpret it or abuse it in some way. And they're realizing because all of these examples that in fact there are people out there who are able to use them and use them very well. And even, you know, there's a large difference between the government of the U.S. and most other countries. In this one thing, I think the U.S. is doing something very well, which is that all data generated by the government of U.S. is public domain. There is no copyright. So anything that is produced by NASA, by National Institute of Health, by any institution that is part of the government will be public. And in fact, this is part of what has fueled their computer industry. Okay, so Google Maps, they take this data from the government and they repackage it and they can create value. And so many different companies have created value on top of this, which is contributing to the country and the income. And in most other countries like Canada, in the England, the government will have the copyright on this data. In fact, in England, even the data about which zip code for the postal system is in which location is copyright. And the city has to buy it from the state. They cannot get it freely. So now a lot of people are really fighting to get this thing available. Because, as I said, having the data enables these kind of projects that you never thought about yourself. So I think this is something that happened just the last few years, actually very recently, like the last 2 years. It's accelerating quite quickly because the benefits are so obvious. Now, of course, in the sharing of scientific data, there are different concerns. And one of the concerns is right now a lot of people... Right, that's... Well, okay, so that's one concern. That is one concern. But even, I mean, all kinds of data that wouldn't have this kind of security implication, researchers want to be first, right? They want to be able, the first person who has that publication, and they're worried that if I share my data with you, and you take it, you publish something, and you will get the credit, I will not, right? So this is part of the incentive system for research that is happening now. And I think that also has to change in ways that really, because research, I mean, academia, going back thousands of years, it was open. Right? I mean, whether it's Socrates or whether it's in Naxila in India, you know, these ancient academies, they did not have any copyright. I mean, they're teaching and learning freely. And I think we need to find ways that we can go back to that ideal while still making sure that the people are getting the the economic compensation and the recognition that they deserve. So, I mean, this kind of discussion is also happening in academia.
In the US, human rights and human rights, for example, US Department of Defense, to make sure that they send an entire data on our machine, that kind of open.
Right. Yes. Yes. So, of course, the business model or the business model for the private or the sustainability model for the public, because also the public has limited funding, is a very key issue. And this is something that we're constantly, there's a lot of innovation. So I showed you, for example, for the journal MedNow, that's a company, and they are making money through being open. But there will be a lot of different cases. However, I think the most important case is that, for example, for software, in the US, only 15% of all software engineers make software that is sold in the shop. Okay, 85% of all software engineers work in institutions where they either create software from scratch for that institution, will never be sold, or they take software that exists and they modify it, right? So if the Delhi government want to implement some new database, okay, they're not selling it, right? They're spending a lot of money on a lot of engineers for their own use, okay? So if they then make that thing available, they are not losing anything because they were never going to market that software. That's not their purpose, okay? If IIPA develops some software for library management, okay, they can share it. And what might happen, if they're lucky, is that other people start using it and start improving on it, which is benefiting IIPA or benefiting the Delhi government, right? So there's a huge amount, and this is the same for research publication and for all this kind of data and educational resources, that you were not going to sell it anyway. Why not make it publicly available, right? So we have two. We definitely want to look at these business models, and there are many of them, and this work is going on, and it will be different in each country, in each situation, how you can make money off this. Nobody thinks that this will be free. Nobody's trying to put people out of work, right?
What is best publishers have? They have the right publishers, being the red and pink. What does this mean? They have different models for business analysis. There are different green things that you can upload on the machine for the green.
So I'll mention two brief examples of sustainability for public projects when it comes to education. The one is from Norway. In Norway, education is free, including university. But it used to be that for high school, students have to buy their own textbooks. And then the government changed, and the new government promised that we will also make free textbooks available for high school. And in Norway, high school is under the province. So the state cannot do anything directly, but they said, we will give each province a certain amount of money to make this happen. And it's up to the province itself how. It can either give the money to the school and let the school buy the books and then lend it to the students, or they can give it directly to the students and have the students directly buy these books and own them, or come up with some other system. This is up to the province. Now, what happened is that all the provinces actually banded together, and they said, we have this money, we will take 5% and use it to develop our own educational resources that will be completely open. And as this happens year after year, we will have a larger collection of material that will actually mean that we will reduce the cost of buying new textbooks. And we will make this freely available to anyone around the world. Of course, it's in a region, so it's limited. But this is something that they're doing with the money they already have. And it's for them, it's an investment that will enable them to save money in the future. Okay, so that's one example of very innovative thinking. Another example is from Indonesia. Okay, Indonesia is extremely geographically dispersed. They have about 16,000 islands, and 8,000 islands have people on them. So trying to make sure that everyone has access to textbooks is very difficult. So they came up with this idea that they will go to the publisher and they will buy the copyright of these books. So that not just buy the book, but actually buy the copyright, so they have the right to do what they want. And the publisher is compensated for their work. So they did this for about 450 textbooks, and they put them online. But of course, in Indonesia, the internet connectivity is very bad, so they don't have this idea that students will themselves be able to go get these books. What they do is they say, in every village, there is some print shop. Okay, please download this book, or you can buy the DVD, it's very cheap. Please print these books locally, and you are free to sell them to make a small profit, but this is the maximum price. It's printed in the newspaper, everyone knows that this is the maximum price. If you sell it above, it's criminal. This way, they give the, you know, it's a very dispersed kind of thing. They give the incentive to all these little shops, so they're providing also, you know, this entrepreneurial spirit. And in each little village, there will be someone printing these books and distributing them to children for a very affordable price. Right? Yes, yeah, so absolutely. I mean, you can also read it online if you want. So these are only two examples. Actually, all around the world, there are very many examples of people innovatively coming up with models, but I'm just sharing a few with you. And I'm sure there will be other models that are uniquely, you know, appropriate to the Indian reality. Thank you.
Pleasure to speak to you. Now we have the lunch. I will not come between you and the lunch.
Okay, thank you very much. And I really hope to hear from you.